This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This, of course, is the show that trainers listen to. I'm Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next hour. As always, you are listening to the show live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you are tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of this show, and you're doing that on our HRN website at horseracingradio.net. You know, last week I had a chance to talk to trainer Jack Sisterson and spent an hour with Jack on this same program. And he looked back on his big grade one win in the personal ensign. He talked about his time around established trainers like Doug O'Neill and Todd Pletcher and Eddie Keneally. And it was a really enjoyable visit. Today we do things just slightly differently because my guest today, at least at the time of this recording, he's 29 years old and he has saddled just three winners so far since his career began in January of 2019, but he has a pedigree that suggests he's going to have a lot of success in this business. He is trainer Eddie Davis, who is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Eddie, welcome to Trainer Talk, my friend.
Yes, sir. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Definitely. I'm doing great, my friend. And, you know, look, I mean, I mentioned the pedigree. Your dad, Robbie Davis, who retired a couple of years ago, rode more than 3,000 winners in his career. Your siblings are involved in the sport as well as jockeys, and now you take the training route. So how did that come about?
Yeah, you know what? I was always the kid, you know, that, you know, loved horse racing. Like, my dad was a jockey, so all my friends were, like, you know, really, like, in my face about it, and I was always really excited about it. I was a kid that would run home from school and try to catch the races and watch my dad ride and stuff. Any chance I would get, I would jump in the car and go to the backside in the morning with my dad. Like, I'd be in the car waiting, I'd be in the car waiting for him, and he'd be laughing that I was already in there before him. And you know, we'd go to make our rounds and stuff. I'd ride Stanley Huff's pony. We used to call him Uncle Stan and stuff. So I really always enjoyed it and fell in love with it at a young age.
Did you think about riding at one point, or did you always want to be a trainer?
That was, like, my dream and my goal ever since I was a little kid, was to become a jockey. And I always wanted to be a jockey. My dad had an equisizer in the basement, and I would constantly be on it and watching him, and he'd be teaching me. And as I got older, in high school and everything, I was a varsity wrestler, four-year varsity wrestler, and, you know, I started gaining muscle and gaining weight, and it was like my junior year of high school. I was like 112, and my dad's like, well, you're perfect size right now, but if you keep doing those push-ups and stuff, you're never going to make it. So I was like, Dad, I don't know, all my friends, we all wrestle, and, you know, this is what we do, and I ended up going up to, like, 120. And plus, you know, I've had a long relationship with my bacon, egg, and cheese, and we're still going strong to this day. And I never wanted to give that up.
Yeah, I guess if you're going to be a jockey, those consistent bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches have to go out the window. You know, you must have seen your dad make all kinds of sacrifices with his diet over the years. What would your dad do to make sure that he stayed at the right weight to continue to make a living?
Oh, he had a very strict diet, and, you know, one thing, he always ate, though, but he was very conscious about what he ate. A lot of fish, a lot of protein and stuff, small portions, and, you know, sometimes he wasn't the happiest person coming home and not being able to eat as much as his seven-year-old daughter or whatever. You know, it's just not the most, you know, pleasurable thing, you know, so we definitely had to be mindful a little bit around him, you know, because he gave up a lot to give us a good life, and really appreciate that.
Yeah, what was it like growing up with your dad being jockey Robbie Davis, one of the premier jockeys in the country?
Oh, man, my dad was like my hero, you know. I loved watching him ride, and we used to call him the long shot kid, and he was like our hero. We always rooted him on, you know, not only me, but my brothers and sisters would be at the kitchen table watching with me, you know, running home from school to watch the races with me. And, you know, the kids at school, they would, you know, ask for jockey cards with his autograph and stuff. So it was a lot of excitement. You know, there's never a dull moment. You know, it was just, it was great.
Yeah, you're not the only Davis that's involved in horse racing now. Tell me about your brother and sisters.
Yeah, Dylan's a jockey here in the MYRA circuit, and he's come a long way. You know, I'm really proud of him and his progression, you know, and he's a smart rider, and he's got good hands on a horse. He's very quiet, and he rides the honest race, you know, and, you know, his progression has been awesome. I love watching him, and I always root for him. Now, if I can only put him on a winner, but I also have my two sisters, Jackie and Katie, and Katie's in the Maryland circuit. Jackie rides in Penn National. And they make their way too pretty well, and they're, you know, you can't count them out either. You know, they make a good run at it too. You know, so we keep it in the family, and we have a lot of fun rooting each other on and watching each other. You know,
would your dad encourage you and your brother and your sisters to follow in his footsteps and get involved in racing when you were young?
For the boys, yes. For the girls, it was pretty much a war, you know, in the household when they, you know, wanted to take that route. You know, it wasn't the easiest route when they, you know, came to my dad. But when all was said and done, you know, 100%, everybody's in, and, you know, we get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
You know, I can remember I got hooked on racing. I grew up an hour from Saratoga, Eddie, and I got hooked on racing at the Spa. And when I started going, it was in the late 80s, and your dad really had it rolling at that point. It just continued to build from there. I know that was about the same time you were born. And as you watched your dad's career unfold, as you got older and you were able to understand it a little bit, what were some of the moments that you remember when you think back on your dad and what he accomplished on the racetrack?
Well, one of my all-time favorites was the 1998 Jockey Club Gold Cup. And my dad, he won the race, and he won the race on a horse named Wagon Limit. And me and my family, we were all going to go to the races that day, and it was pouring. It was raining cats and dogs, and my dad told the whole family, no, you guys just stay home. You know, I'm on a long shot, morning line 30-1. You guys just stay home, you know. And so we stayed home, and we ended up watching it in the living room. Everybody huddled together, and gentlemen and Skipaway, you know, they broke, and they dueled all the way to the stretch. And here come my dad on Wagon Limit, trained by the chief, Alan Jerkins. And he was just taking them off. He ended up winning the race. And the roof went off of our house that day. And we were so excited. And everybody was screaming and yelling and, you know, watching my dad. He was hugging the chief. The chief was crying. They're showing the chief crying, you know. And it's just, it was an out-of-body experience just watching him, you know. So, you know, those are the things that you remember. And, you know, he definitely has a bunch of other, you know, that we remember.
Yeah. Why do you think your dad was so successful as a rider?
He was very disciplined. You know, when I was growing up, he every day before he went to work, we had a little workout system in the basement. Every single day he was on the workout system, 15, 20, 30 minutes, riding Equalizer on the bike. And after that, you know, after the races, he'd come home and watch replays. And I'd be sitting there with him, you know, and just like, you know, just kind of trying to understand it. And, you know, he taught me so much about how to watch a race and, you know, just jockey errors and, you know, different things. And, you know, it was really nice to just kind of get into it as much as he was a little bit, you know, or try to get that level of understanding of the game.
One of the favorite things I've had the chance to do over the past couple of years anyways on the radio side of things was to meet with John Velasquez in the jocks room at Gulfstream Park and have him walk me through his strategy and the way he got ready for a race, the way he would prepare, not necessarily what he was going to do when the gates open, but how he would prepare for his plan A, his plan B, and his plan C. And it was so amazing to see what jockeys go through and the thought process that goes into it. I can't imagine what it would be like to sit down and watch game film, if you will, and watch replays and have a jockey like your dad walk you through it. What things did you learn as you were watching the races with him?
You learn a lot, you know. You learn about pace. You learn about, you know, going through holes, you know, different things, right leads, left leads. You know, this horse is lugging out, you know, just. And then he just points these little things out. And as I got older, then I started clicking, you know, because when I was younger, I didn't really understand what was going on completely. But as I got older, you know, it started clicking. Excuse me. Started clicking a lot more, and now I'm pointing things out to him, you know, a little bit, and then we go back and forth. So it makes it really fun, you know, that we can do that, bounce off each other while we watch races, or, you know, call each other, hey, did you see that? What'd you think about that? And blah blah blah, you know.
Yeah, every athlete when they go back and watch game film after a specific game will be critical of themselves. They'll find good things they did and also find things that they want to improve upon. Was your dad critical of himself when he would watch those and find things that he could get better at?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. He was very critical of himself, and you could tell the days where, you know, he thought he could have did a little better or done something different, you know? But you could tell he was also very grateful to come home to us too, you know, which has always made it really nice.
Yeah, I loved it. By the way, our good friend Sean Clancy with the Saratoga Special did a nice feature on you and your family a couple of weeks ago in the Saratoga Special. And one of the quotes that was my favorite in that whole piece is when you came home one day and you said, "Listen, Dad, I'm not going to waste your money. I'm not going to college, and I'm not going to ask you for $500,000 or whatever it takes. It's not going to be for me. I've always loved the horses." Tell me about that conversation.
Yeah, you know, it just, he knew, like, in a way, I knew. You know, after high school, that was it, you know. It was like, well, you know, you're done with high school. What are you going to do with your life? You know, now everybody's making decisions. Friends are going to college. People are taking over the family business, are starting with their family business, and our family business is horse racing, you know, and, you know, this is home to me, and this is what feels right, you know, and, you know, I take pride in that, you know, and this is where I want to be, you know. I don't care, I don't have to make $1 million, you know, I just want to be here, you know. That's the big thing with me.
At that point, did he encourage you to take up the reins and go out on your own?
Well, he actually started training right when I graduated high school, which opened up the window for me to, you know, come help him, you know. And so he actually was, we had a couple ponies on the farm 10 miles out of Saratoga where he was teaching me how to ride and gallop and stuff. And I was kind of getting the hang of it. And, after that, I came to the track with him and he had like 3 horses and, I started helping him with the, you know, the stable work, and he's teaching me how to pick out the feed and, you know, all the groundwork, you know, and then eventually I started riding, you know, I started galloping, and, you know, I kept on with that. And I was half nervous, you know. It was something that I really had to persevere through, you know, because it wasn't easy at first. It really wasn't. But, you know, as I gained my confidence, you know, I started getting pretty good at it, you know. And once I got good at it, I started riding for other people, like freelancing, you know. Started freelancing, and then I started putting some money in my pocket. And I was like, wow, you can make a little bit of money here. You know, because when you work for your parent, or your family or your parents, they want you to work the hardest and get paid the least. But they're teaching you something, you know, where you can go out on your own and, you know, make a living. So you gotta honor that.
Talking with trainer Eddie Davis here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. As you've heard, if you are just joining us, by the way, I guess you haven't heard, but he learned from his dad, Robbie Davis, who, of course, a jockey that had so much success in this sport, more than 3,000 victories to his credit. And now Robbie is also training horses. Eddie talking about the fact that he went to work for his dad, learned from him before moving on. When you were working with your dad, you talked about it being challenging at first with galloping horses and really learning the ropes. What were some of the challenges you had to overcome, Eddie, in those early days?
You know, I'd say, you know, just, you know, exercise riding the horses correctly and not letting them run off or, you know, and really just the main thing is just wrapping your whole head around it because, you know, I was never in it like that, you know. And so that it was tough adjusting to it, to the whole lifestyle, you know, because, you know, I wasn't never in it like that. You know what I mean? Because it's definitely a lifestyle.
How long did you work with your dad?
Yeah, I stayed with my dad for a good 5 years, like 18 to 24, 18 to 25. And but at that time, you know, I freelanced a lot of horses and got to ride, you know, a lot of different horses and stuff for different people.
At the age of 25, you decided to take out your assistant trainer license, and your dad told you maybe it was time to leave the nest and go work for somebody else, as he described it, for somebody good. And you landed in some pretty good hands,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's what he said. He said it's time. You know, you're at the point where, you know, you're turned into a good little horseman, and, you know, you can be useful, but you got to go out there and learn. You know, you don't want to be an exercise rider the rest of your life. There's nothing wrong with that, but I want to see you do bigger and better things. He's always been my best supporter. And, you know, at that time, I think we were in Belmont, and it was after the summer. And so I went to barn to barn. You know, I was walking. I went in, like, all types of barns. I went into David Jacobson's at the time, and I was a little nervous doing that, but I went in there and showed my face, and, you know, I told him I'm looking for, like, a foreman assistant, and I can gallop, you know, and he said, you know, we'll get back to you. I like the idea of that, this and that. I said, okay, no problem. Then I remember going to Gary Contessa's barn, went in there looking for a foreman assistant. I can gallop, blah, blah, blah. And they said, oh really? We're looking for somebody. And come back tomorrow. Gary will be here. I talked to the assistant at the time. I think it was Juan or something. And then so I said, oh, maybe I'll go do that. So eventually, I think it was that day, I caught wind that Jimmy Jerkin's assistant at the time, which was Ken Sweezy, was going out on his own, you know. And they said, go check with him. And so I went to Jimmy's barn, and I ran into a man. His name was Steve Moyer. And Steve Moyer said, "What?" He said, "Hey, let me get your number. This and that. You can start freelancing for us now, but I guarantee there'll be a spot for you here, and you'll get a chance to work with some top-notch horses." And then I landed that spot in there. But, you know, Jimmy come back from Florida. You know, it wasn't. I didn't just show up and I was the assistant. You know, but I wanted to show Jimmy that, you know, I was there to work, and I wanted to be there, you know, at the same sense. So I worked so hard, you know, that he couldn't deny me a spot, you know, for a man that gallops, you know, you know, holds for the vet and does all the assistant duty, go to the paddock and all that. I learned a lot from Jimmy, you know, and I really appreciated him taking me under his wing. And, you know, I worked there for a little over 2 years, and I can count on one, maybe half of one hand how many days off I had. But I wanted to be there, you know. And he knew that. And, you know, it was nice. It was nice to work there and get to work with some top-notch horses and really, you know, learn the ropes, you know, from a possibly future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And the Jerkins family, so good to your family. You went back and told the story earlier about Wagon Limit upsetting Skipaway in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Wagon Limit, trained by the chief, who was Jimmy's father, of course. And then you go to work with Jimmy. And by the way, if I'm not mistaken, your dad rode Jimmy's first winner back in 1997, a horse named Ninth Inning. Is that right?
Ninth Inning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. What
amazing the way that whole story weaves together with the Davis family and the Jerkins family.
Yeah, it was kind of ironic. It was pretty cool, though. When I had the opportunity and I told my dad, he would have been so mad if I went to someone else's barn, you know, because he knows what kind of horsemen they are, and they're true horsemen, and they're serious horsemen. So that really made him happy.
You know, what every trainer has their own style, their own philosophy, their own approach. And quite often, Eddie, when I ask a trainer this question on the show, they say, well, patience is the key. That's the key to being a good horse trainer. You have to let the horses come along. You can't force them to do something. You just have to be patient. But your dad obviously has his own style as he's learning to be a trainer now. Jimmy has his own style. So what are some of the things that maybe they do the same and they do a little bit differently that make it work for both of them?
That's a tough question. I'm going to be honest. They do a lot of things differently. And, my dad, you know, he has a totally different background than Jimmy Jerkins. He's coming from being a jockey. My dad is a very good horseman and, he does, you know, pay attention and he's on top of things. You know, Jimmy's got a bigger outfit and, they do a lot of things in a different ways. I don't know how to answer it, to be honest.
Yeah, let me ask it to you this way then, Eddie. What does Jimmy do that makes Jimmy so good?
Yeah, Jimmy's an incredible horseman, and he pays attention to detail. And the one thing that I says that I think that he does the best. He shows up and he's always there and he watches every single horse train. And, you know, he goes down the shed row, make sure, you know, all the grooms are doing their jobs. And, he even comes at 8 o'clock at night and he says, that's the time when you can tell the best time when you can tell how the horse is really doing from the manure to the feed. You know, the guy's amazing and he's relentless too, you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's a great philosophy. And, you know, Jimmy's been on this program before. I've had a chance to talk with him, and he is one of the premier horsemen that we have in the sport today. And Eddie, there's a difference, right? There's a difference between being a horseman and being just a horse trainer, isn't there?
I agree.
Yeah, and Jimmy's one of those guys. It's just incredible. Eddie Davis with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. As you heard, going out on his own. He's been out on his own now and really has things moving in the right direction. I want to ask you about your very first career win. Tell me about that day.
Oh, that was really exciting. It was Tis Morning at Belmont and a little main special weight and the horse was knocking on the door throughout the winter, and I didn't really know how he was going to do once the big boys came back from Florida with some of their stock. And I believe it was furlongs on the dirt at Belmont Park, and he broke sharply, and he went along with a Pletcher horse, and they dueled all the way through the stretch. My heart was pumping, And we ended up getting the Bob at the finish line. And so my first win, I beat Todd Pletcher on the wire. That was really exciting. I don't know how often that'll happen, but it did happen at least once. I can say that for now. Well, that was exciting.
Yeah, you can say that, and you can also say that you've won a race at Saratoga now, too.
Oh, my God, that was really cool. That was great. You know, this is pretty much my hometown here, and I graduated high school from Saratoga. And we picked that mare up for a private purchase from Roy Lerman, and basically she went her whole career on the turf, and since I've had her, I kept her on the dirt. I love the way she went on the dirt, and we've had some success with her on the dirt in the, you know, lower level claiming, but, you know, we're still kind of getting the job done there, you know. So, yeah, I was really happy to pick her up. She was actually entered in the November mix sale, Saratoga November mix sale, and she didn't meet reserve. It's a broodmare prospect, racing prospect. So I went and saw her, and I loved her disposition, and she wasn't problem free, but it was, you know, a couple little things I thought I could tighten down and maybe be a useful horse, and she turned out to be okay.
Yeah, and that was Kinky Socks, who won on July 24th at Saratoga, giving you yet another win to your credit, but a very special one coming at Saratoga. I can't even imagine what that must have been like for a kid that, you know, as you said, kind of your hometown. You go to Saratoga High School. Your dad had so much success at Saratoga. You know, you grow up around there. And then that's got to be almost one of the true pinnacles of any trainer's career, just to win a race at Saratoga.
There's no place, fans or no fans, better than to win at Saratoga. You know, and it just made it that much more special that I got all my friends and fans, some family here. And, you know, my phone, I never had more text messages on my phone after that win in my life. It was really kind of funny.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Who was the first person to text you? Do you remember?
My dad's amazing. He'll call me like right after they cross the wire. So it's definitely got to be my dad. Sometimes he'll call me in the paddock. How you doing? Are you nervous? And start laughing, you know, if I got a live one going or something.
Oh, that's great. But, Eddie Davis with me here on Trainer Talk. We're coming up to the commercial break. Eddie, stay with me. We'll be back in just a minute. When we come back, we'll talk more about your philosophy now that you're training horses, and we'll talk about some of the other big-name horses you had the chance to be around, even as you were working with Jimmy Jerkins. We'll do that second half of the program. It's all ahead on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, Fasig's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasig Tipton's has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're gonna have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasig Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming to the top of the stretch. It is Gentleman trying to pull off the upset here. Skipaway is back second. Bailey is all over Skipaway, but it is Gentleman who's getting away. And farther back, Wagon Limit is getting closer and Running Stag toward the inside. It's going to be Gentleman now getting away by six lengths. Skipaway second on the outside. Wagon Limit trying for an upset bid here. Less than a furlong to go. It's Gentleman in front, but he was softened up by Skipaway. And here comes Wagon Limit at 34-1. And Wagon Limit is going to do it. Wagon Limit, a stunning upset. Gentlemen, weakened from that enervating speed duel with Skipaway finishing second, and Skipaway winds up third.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, right here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, visiting with trainer Eddie Davis, the son of jockey Robbie Davis, who was aboard Wagon Limit for that upset of Skipaway in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Tom Durkin had the call, and as Eddie said in the first half of the program, that is maybe his favorite moment that he's ever had in watching his dad ride. It was special. He said the roof came off the house that day, and I can imagine it did, especially with the way Wagon Limit ran down the stretch. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows is available for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. And you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and on Instagram. Eddie, once you told me that, I said, look, this is going to be perfect, because I knew I had that stretch call coming up for you coming out of the commercial break there. How'd that sound?
Oh, man, you're giving me chills all over again. That was great. That was
awesome. I remember it was a sloppy track that day too, right?
Oh, it was a freaking swimming pool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. He came storming home and ran him down as a long shot. And, you know, that has to be one of the greatest feelings for a jockey when you're on a horse that is moving that well, that late in the race, and you're running everybody down. You just know you're going to get there. That has to be an amazing feeling.
Forget it. Like a grade $1 million race. And I guess my dad always tells the story, but in the paddock before the race, I guess the chief came up to him and he said, listen, Rob, just get a check. That's all I want. Just get a check, you know. And he went out there and did that, and then he come back. He said, how's that for a check, chief? And they grabbed a big one.
Yeah, they certainly did. And another chapter in the life of the giant killer, right? That lore of him upsetting so many big-time horses. And there you have another one right there with Wagon Limit, and your dad got to be part of it.
That's amazing. Yeah, it really is.
You know, your dad would say that his favorite moment in racing was not necessarily that moment when he won with Wagon Limit. He would say it actually goes back to his first win as a trainer and keeping everything in the family for very good reason. Tell me about that day.
Yeah. Was it? It was Sandy and the Sun, no?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, with Sandy and the Sun, I believe. Was Jackie on him?
Yes, you got it.
Oh my God! Yeah, that was awesome. You know, my dad he bought the horse as a yearling in the Saratoga sale here in the New York bred Saratoga sale for like $600, and so we actually broke the horse on our farm, and we all took turns riding him pretty much, and we didn't really know what he was going to be, but he ended up making a little bit of money, and he won my dad's first race as a trainer. Oh, we were all over the moon. It was so exciting, you know, especially to take a no-name horse and, you know, win an allowance-level race in New York. It's just, you know, it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, your dad bought the horse for $700 and giving a leg up to your sister Jackie, and she gets the victory. That's what he said. He said it was the most exciting win that he's ever had because he did it with your sister. And again, coming back to what you said earlier, your dad – always a great family man.
Oh, forget it. Yeah, we were all so pumped for that. You know, that was just that win definitely had some roots.
How many times have you given a leg up to one of your siblings so far?
Oh yeah, Dylan almost had my first win back in Aqueduct 2019 winter, and we got nipped in the nose by like a huge long shot, but. You know, as far as that, I'd probably, I'd say like 10, maybe, or 10 to 15 times with Dylan.
Yeah, he doesn't want to mess up.
I haven't rode one of my sisters yet, but.
Yeah, you talked about being a former wrestler. He doesn't want to mess it up, right? He's going to pay for it if he gives it a bad ride.
That's awesome. Yeah, he knows better.
What's it like when you're doing that? You're standing there with your brother, and you're giving him a leg up. Obviously, you're a team at that point, but. Do you still give them the same instructions you would give any other jockey, or is it a different dynamic?
No, I definitely do, you know, keep it serious because, you know, between me being here every day, 7 days a week, and the owners putting forth the money, you know, we got to keep it business because, you know, this is our livelihood in the same sense, you know. So, you know, we talk about the race, and we talk about how they, you know, give ourselves the best shot to pick up a check or get the job done, you know, and that's it. We can always have fun, you know, when you clock out, you know.
What are some of the biggest challenges the new trainer faces when you're trying to get your business off the ground, Eddie?
You know, the biggest thing probably is to gain more owners and, you know, to gain the trust of owners. And, you know, it's hard to get rolling sometimes when you don't really have the stock. And you're only dealing, like, you only have a couple, you have 4 to 5 horses. You know, they maybe run once a month or give or take, you know. So you really got to give it your best shot, you know, to really get your name out there.
Is it hard to not get discouraged when things don't maybe go the way you want them to go early on?
No, you should never get discouraged. You should always believe in what you do. And, you know, if you have to tweak a couple things or change a couple things up, you got to go back to the drawing board. I'm constantly going back to the drawing board, you know, after races, after training, you know, checking each horse. And, you know, you got to go back to the drawing board and see what you can do better because you can always do something a little better.
Yeah, Eddie Davis, my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. He is learning, and he has got things moving in the right direction with his operation now. I mentioned 3 wins so far, but 2 of those have come here in 2020, and you've only had 20 starters to date. So, you know, percentage-wise, you've had 3 seconds. The horses are running well. What have you learned over the course of the past year or so, Eddie, that's helped?
You know, this year has been a little different for me, and what I learned the most is, you know, you got to put these horses where they can be competitive, you know, because if you're just going out there and you're 70-1, there's a reason why you're 70-1. You want to be like, you know, 6-1 and under to give your horse the best shot. So you got to really spot them right, you know, to give yourself and the horse the best shot to win. So I feel like I've been a little more aggressive this year, and, you know, it just, there's so much time and effort from me and my team. And then plus, you know, the owner's putting forth the money. It doesn't make any sense if you're not going where you're going to be competitive, you know? So I try to stress that to owners, you know, we gotta put them where they belong.
How does, you know, that's fascinating to me, Eddie. How does a trainer determine what the right spot is and the proper level is for a horse? How do you know?
Yep. Me personally, I ride each and every one of my horses right now. I go off of a feeling, plus the, you know, their past performances, it will tell you a lot, you know, but you know, the fact that I get to ride them every day, I think is a slight advantage. You know, Rudy Rodriguez has had a lot of success, and he rides, he still rides to this date, you know, his horses, and I believe that really gave him a slight advantage.
Yeah, I would imagine that there is some type of advantage. At least you feel what's underneath you, right? You're not relying on somebody else to tell you. You know what's going on underneath you.
Oh, for sure. And you know, I have a chart, a daily training chart. But when I get out there and I'm on the racetrack, that chart could mean absolutely nothing, to be honest. You know. Because what the horse is telling me, that's what I'm going to do. You know, so I try to, you know, go off of my best instincts and best horsemanship skills in that sense.
Does that help you pre-race when you're talking to a jockey and you give them those final instructions? Because of the fact that you've been on a horse, you know the horse so well, you've ridden them, you know how the horse responds to certain things. Does that help you when you're giving instructions to a jockey?
Me personally, I try to keep it very brief with the jockey, and I don't like to tell him too much because you don't want to, you know, just just keep it very brief. I like to keep it very brief. But if there is something that I think will help, or just give them a heads up, I will do it. And I think it does help.
Yeah, how would you describe your overall philosophy when it comes to training horses? If you were to sum it up, how would you do it?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, you know, you got to feed them good, and you got to train them good as long as they're up to it. So that's a big thing with me. Attention to detail is big. One of the biggest things that I've kind of learned, whether it's older or younger horses, is you have to continuously remind them that their job is to run in the stretch. They don't pay on the backside. They pay at the finish line, you know. So whether it's galloping, breezing, or you know, blowing a horse out through the lane, you just got, in my mind, you have to continuously remind them that their job is to run through the stretch.
Yeah, that's interesting. How do you do that? How do you get them to learn that?
It's like repetitive. It's repetitive, and you know, eventually it gets stuck in their head. And the good ones, it clicks. You know, it clicks with them that it's time to run. You know, in the stretch. But you know, the little things is what makes the big things. Like, if you get the little things right, the big things will fall into place, I believe.
You know, I after you won your first race at Saratoga back on July 24th, it was such a special thing for you, as you talked about earlier. But does your phone start ringing a little bit more because people are paying attention to a premier meet like Saratoga and they know the competition is so tough, to see that you are capable of training a horse to win at Saratoga? Does that do anything for your business, Eddie?
Oh, for sure. And like, I came up here, I had four horses. Now I have seven, and I have three on the way. So that's going to put me at 10. So, I mean, it definitely went, you know, it definitely helped. It helps out, you know, when you do okay.
Yeah. Well, we talked about the fact that you worked with your dad before going out and getting a job with Jimmy Jerkins. You spent a lot of time working with Jimmy and learning from him, which you couldn't find a better teacher in that respect. Outside of your dad and Jimmy, who are some of the other people who have had a big influence on your career?
You know, I have a few different mentors. I definitely have to shout out Steve Moyer. He's he worked with Jimmy for years too. He's always has good advice, and he was a trainer himself at one point in time, and he's a very knowledgeable horseman, and I can go to him with anything. I definitely reach out to Jimmy often, and we have good conversations. Who else? Joe Brocklebank. I can call him and get some advice from him and the game stock agent. Russell Cohen, he's a good one. He I can talk to him or call him anytime. He actually owned FNX, and we've developed a pretty good relationship over the past couple of years.
Isn't it amazing how even after you stop working with people, like, again, sticking with Jimmy for an example here, you know, you're competing against him now, and there's a chance that you may end up in the same race as him, and you're trying to beat him, just like you did with Todd Pletcher for your first win. But yet, when you pick up the phone and call them, even though, yes, you're competing in one sense, they're always more than willing to give you advice that can help you and maybe even help you beat them in a race. This game is so fascinating in that respect.
You know, it's there's definitely some family vibes, you know, to it. And, you know, I really try to stick to my roots and, you know, and be grateful for the people that, you know, have supported me and been there for me and are still here for me, you know. So it's really nice to have, you know, some old vets to, you know, kind of fall back on when I get in a, you know, when I'm in a pickle or I'm thinking about something too much and kind of get some relief.
What's the one thing you're most proud of that you've been able to accomplish so far, Eddie?
My time with Jimmy is what I'm probably most proud of, because that's, I really got to learn a lot, and I got to be around some top-notch horses, and I really took pride in galloping his horses, and you know, it come to a time where he really put his trust in me, and you know, to blow out horses 2 days before a race, or before, you know, a big stake race, even, you know, 2-3 days before. So you know, I'm pretty proud of that, and you know, some of the horses I got to work with there.
Yeah, tell me about some of those horses. He had several top-notch horses, graded stakes caliber horses, and graded stakes winners. Who were some of the horses that you had the chance to be around and to work with?
So, one of my favorites, all-time favorites, and will be, is Preservationist, and he's a big, robust colt. And I actually, I was his regular gallop rider for a while, and he was such a cool horse. He was so kind. And, you know, when I was riding him and I got to ride him, when he stepped on the track, he just had this presence, you know, like he is the man, you know. And I really enjoyed, you know, enjoyed riding him. He was just so smooth and fluent for such a big, robust horse. I actually got the chance to saddle him for his first two winners. And, you know, I think he had something going on where he had to, you know, take a break, and then that's pretty much when I went out on my own. But some of the other ones would be like Shaman Ghost, Holy Helena, Unified. Who else? Delta Prince. He's actually was a half to Royal Delta. Dolphus. Yeah, that's he was a half to Rachel Alexander. Yep. He was second to Shaman Ghost in Pimlico Special. I actually rode them both before that, the day of the race on Pimlico's track, and then they ran 1-2 that day. Well, so Rocketry, he was awesome. He's a colt by Hard's Fun. We broke a 90-year-old track record at Belmont, which was set by Man of War. That was awesome. That was a good day. You know, just
I remember
to put
that
name in, or I mean, Rocketry and Jimmy's name in the record book.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, that's the other neat thing. You know, you're getting on those horses, and you're part of the team. And even though you're not the trainer of record, you still feel like you had a major hand in that. You did. You had a major hand in getting that horse ready to perform the way they did on game day. That's special, man.
Yeah, no, that's why that you can't take. You know, that feeling is just irreplaceable. You know, and just I was really lucky and fortunate enough to work under Jimmy and for him to take me under my wing. And, you know.
You know, when Jack Sisterson was on the show with me last week, one thing he emphasized was his team and how he couldn't do it without surrounding himself with good people and having that great team around him. How about you? Have you been able already to put people around you that are helping you be successful?
Oh yeah. I mean, I have some good people that really are consistent and show up, and you know, they've been a big help. But, you know, believe it or not, I do a lot of it myself. I'm not afraid to get in there. I love to tack my own horses because, you know, I put the saddle on right where I want it, and like I said, I ride my own, and I'm not afraid to wash one if I need to. But yeah, you know, I'm pounding the pavement over here in a way too. But you know, I got a pretty good set of guys actually that, you know, pretty much will go to war for me. You know, so I definitely appreciate that. You have to, you know, you got to take care of those guys.
Yeah, Eddie, how many horses do you have in training right now?
So I have 7 right now.
What's the optimal number? Do you see yourself being maybe up the road like a Todd Pletcher or a Steve Asmussen where you have horses all over the country, or do you want to stay maybe a little more boutique?
I'd definitely say boutique, and, you know, I'd love to – my top number would probably be 40 or 50 if I ever get to that point. You know, I just – you know, I just something about it, you know, where you want to be able to see the horses that you have and how they're cooling out, and, you know, and you want to be able to see them and keep your finger on the pulse on each and every one of them. You know, when you get that big, it's not that easy anymore. But, you know, you really have to have good help for that. You know, if it's in the cards, then it's in the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, Eddie Davis here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Eddie, if you weren't training horses, what else do you think you might be doing?
Oh, man. What would I be doing? Maybe I'd be a professional ping pong player or something.
Professional ping pong player. I have to tell you, I've been doing this show for more than 8 years now, and I don't think anybody's ever said professional ping pong player.
Oh, me and my dad and my brothers always used to battle growing up at the ping pong table. So I don't really know, to be honest.
There's always ping pong or pool or something in the jocks' rooms, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We grew up on that. And then we have one at home always, too.
Are you a pretty good pool player, too?
I'm not that good. You know what's really good is my grandma Jana. She's awesome. Yeah, she's really good at pool.
Just keep your wallet at home when you're playing with her.
Definitely.
Eddie Davis here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. You know, I mentioned at the top of the show, Eddie, you're a young guy in this game, and you're learning and you're getting your own business off the ground, but you're 29 years old. Do you take advantage of things like social media to try to help you grow your business?
You know, right now I don't have a website, but I do use Facebook, and it's Edmund Davis Racing, and we try to keep up on that as much as we can, just to kind of show, you know, the people what we're up to and how our horses are doing. So yeah, definitely check that out. I'll work on a website.
Yeah, it's funny. I keep referring to you as Eddie Davis, but in the program it is Edmund Davis. So if people are confused by that, well, now you know. And Edmund Davis Racing on Facebook, the place to go to learn more about Eddie and his operation and keep up with all of his horses. I would imagine that for a young guy like yourself, that has to be important to keep the word out there and let people know what's going on, right?
Oh, for sure. You know, it's you got to kind of use it as your advantage, and try to attract as many people as you can for the time being, you know.
Yep. We're inside the final 5 minutes here, Eddie, the final furlong, if you will, to this program. If you could spend the day hanging out with one trainer to pick their brain, maybe have lunch with them, have dinner, whatever it might be, who would that one trainer be?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. It's tough not to say Bob Baffert. But dead or alive?
Sure, let's go that way. And thank God Bob is still alive.
I would go with Alan Jerkins, 100%.
Yeah.
Because I was too young. I didn't really get to spend time around him. But, you know, I guess he was a good mentor to everyone on the backside. And he was very knowledgeable about the horses.
Yeah, he would be a wonderful person to sit down and pick their brain. You know, I didn't have a chance to spend much time with him. I had a chance to meet him down at Gulfstream just as I was getting this show off the ground years ago. And he was all set to come on the program with me, and then, of course, he passed away, so we never got to do it. It's one of the true regrets that I have is that I never got to spend an hour with him.
Oh, man, that's a shame. That's too bad, you know.
Yeah, it would have been fantastic to let him tell stories and talk about his philosophy and to learn from him. But, yeah, he's a good one. Bob Baffert is somebody else who could certainly teach you a thing or two if you're going to be picking his brain. Have you had the chance to sit down and talk with Bob at all in any capacity or meet him?
No, I have not. You know, I haven't. I have never got the chance to.
Yeah, well, it'll happen eventually. Maybe when you're running a horse against him and you finish in front of him one day, you can talk to him after that. Tell him it was a good race, but he came up a little short.
Yeah. one can dream, but we'll see. Hopefully one day.
Well, Eddie, we're down to about 2 minutes left, so let me ask you this question. I always like to end the show by asking trainers to let me know something about them that we haven't talked about yet that people might not know. And you talked about being a wrestler in high school. What other hobbies or things do you enjoy doing outside of horse racing?
I love golf.
I love to play golf, and Saratoga has great courses over here and the surrounding area, too. The state park is awesome to play. It's a very forgiving course if you're continuously shanking them like me. I think I lost you.
No, I got you. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
So, I have played that state course in Saratoga, and it wasn't forgiving for me at all. So I can tell you that.
Awesome.
But if I ever get a chance to travel back up there again, which we will before too long, I'm sure, we'll have to get together and hit a few golf balls, Eddie.
Oh, for sure. I'm in Barn 70 on the Oklahoma track.
All right. Well, listen, all the best. Really enjoyed the visit and hearing your story, and you're one of the true rising stars in the sport, so keep it rolling, and we'll catch up again soon, my friend. Good luck.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. I always enjoy the show. I just want to give a shout-out to my brother, Robbie Jr. It's his birthday today.
Oh, awesome.
Happy birthday, Robbie.
Yeah, happy birthday, Robbie. All right, Eddie, appreciate the visit. Good luck.
Oh, thanks a lot.
All right, Eddie Davis here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. And, of course, this show being recorded in advance, so by the time you're hearing it, old Junior will have his birthday already. He'll be in the books. But Eddie, nice enough to give a shout-out to his brother and nice enough to be here with me on Trainer Talk. If you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast at your leisure and follow us on social media at HRRN. On Twitter. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton.